Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guests, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about, what was your childhood like? How did you grow up? What is abuse all about? How have we lived in this world and said, man, I don't know, I have had a life of bumpers, cables, you know, those bumper cars that you see at the fair, or also I've had a life of potholes going over the edge, and I'm not even sure where I am each day. If you've had a several decades behind your belt, so to speak, definitely you've been through the ringer. I know myself, being in my 60s, the word abuse, it's sort of like, would you like me to check all those off for you? Would you like me to share all of these other situations and experiences? Great. Now that they have the new ACE adverse events for childhood experiences, I'll say, so you're saying that if we have these 10 experiences in our childhood, maybe we might have some issues. Well, I've got all 10, and I even want to add an 11. It's called a natural disaster. Let's add 11. And we think about it. We say, oh, but these are just things that happen to everyone. Somebody has this. I saw they have that. And they maybe have a story of their past. The difference is, where are they today? The point is that where you are today, are you bringing a lot of your old experiences with you? Are you reliving them each day? Or have you chosen to work through them, and now you're on to the next set of evolution, of transformation within this one lifetime? It's definitely about opening up your eyes for awareness, change, possibilities, and potentials, because they're all out there. My guest today is Adine Finola. Her book is My Exquisite Purple Life, Insights from a Woman Who Never Should Have Made It But Did. Adine, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Oh, Dr. Jeanette, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. So, Adine, don't you think that these days, if you have enough decades behind your belt, you've been down this road, yes?
Oh, yes, most definitely. Yeah, I think that even the more decades you have, the greater awareness you have of the reality that you may have experienced in your childhood that you may just have accepted as normal. You know, right. In my childhood, I grew up in a religious cult, and my parents were taught that the Bible gave them authority to spank my sister and I, but the way that they spanked us was with a 2x4. Mm-hmm. And because that was my normal, I never questioned it. I certainly didn't enjoy it, but if you had asked me at age 18, 19, 21, even 22, if I thought that my parents had abused me or was I beaten, I would have said, oh my gosh, absolutely not, you know?
Right.
And it wasn't until I sat down with a therapist when I was 23, 24, maybe 25. And I had left the cult, and I was just beginning to unpack some of those experiences because my parents joined when I was 8 years old. So it was all my formative years, pretty much. And I was sitting with this therapist, and I must have casually mentioned or said something about my father spanking me. And she knew enough to say, hold on a second, back up, tell me about this spanking. And so I described it to her, and she said, Adie, you were beaten. And I just gave her my conditioned response. I said, oh, no, 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 no. My father was just thanking me and, you know, spoil the rod, spare the rod, spoil the child, and da, da, da. And she said, no, that was not spanking. That was beating. And that was the beginning of my awareness of like, oh, you know, because all of, you know, when you talk about that list of 10 things and you want to add the 11th, I'll bet you if I could go down every single one of those 10 items, I'll bet you all of those were present and
right.
I wouldn't have questioned any of them.
Right.
It was my normal. It was my
right.
normal. And so I think that's the gift of aging, is that because
mm-hmm.
it has taken me decades to unpack the abuse and difficulties and just the bizarreness of my childhood having been raised in a cult. So, yeah.
Don't you think also, too, the idea that it was so prevalent in the 50s and 60s to be raised in certain ways, and yours was a little later of a decade, but for myself, that was very common. And when I say very common, it was in my recollection that it was common.
Mm-hmm.
But really what was common was a ancestral lineage. In other words,
mm-hmm.
we saw it at our
yeah.
cousins' houses. We saw it at our aunts or uncles, grandparents, at our own home. Well, we thought it was common because we saw it within that context. However,
mm-hmm.
if we had gone outside and saw a different family or a different lineage, we didn't even notice was it true or not there. Or if we went to our family friend's home, we might have saw pieces of it there because they were family friends. So in other
mm-hmm.
words, you know, one salamander lives with another salamander, is friends with another
right.
salamander. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and,
birds of a feather flock together.
Right,
yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
And so whatever shade of gray they are today is what they show up with, and that's how they all show up together, and that's how they all are in it, the same sort of paradigm wheel. So really that's how we thought it was normal. However, if you actually take yourself out and misplace or displace or replace yourself to another
mm-hmm.
culture, another country, another side of the U.S., you know,
mm-hmm.
away, and you're having to be able to now source yourself in a different way and develop new connections, maybe that's when your awareness happens. So if you even look back on it, you know, 50s and 60s and when I grew up was one thing. Then it was started, oh, you can airplane travel in the 70s. It's like, ooh, you can go somewhere? And then you
mm-hmm.
see something else. And then you got out to college. And then you got out to, you know, oh, you mean I can get a divorce and I'm still Roman Catholic? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So in other
yeah.
words, I think it's more that you and I are correlating our experiences. However, it's correlating with the history and the evolution of the human being in the
mm-hmm.
past 70 or 80 years.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree with that. You know, my parents were born in the 40s and then therefore were raised in the 50s, and everyone spanked their kids. I mean,
right.
of course, obviously there had to have been some exceptions to that rule, but that was very widely accepted and no one even thought that was,
mm-hmm.
No one even questioned whether that was a good idea. And of course
right.
they weren't, you know, and it's interesting because when you talk about that, you know, that familial lineage,
yes.
one of the things that I have looked at a lot in my life is the idea of generational healing. And although my parents were very, very broken people and they were very abusive, I can recognize that they were less abusive to my sister and I than their parents were to them.
Right.
And I can also look to the time in my middle 20s when I became pregnant with my first daughter as being a huge crossroads for me to accelerate my own personal examination of my childhood. trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my own child. So now with the next generation, and I made a very deliberate decision not to violate my children's body in any way whatsoever with any kind of physical punishment. And I remember having this conversation with my father when my oldest, well, I have two daughters, my older daughter was, I don't know, maybe 18 months old, and the subject of spanking came up, and I said, absolutely not, under no circumstances. I wasn't even willing to say, like, okay, I'm going to spank, but in a more appropriate way, and in not in the way that would be categorized as beating. I just didn't want to spank at all. And he said to me, you know, he said, oh, you cannot raise a well-mannered, obedient child without spanking them, you know, and I always joke that because I am a redhead and I was born a redhead, and I always joke, I always blame it on that. But I just looked at him and I said, oh, yeah, watch me.
Right.
And I did. I did not spank my children. I didn't use any kind of physical correction with them. I used timeouts and I used logical consequences and, you know, 1, 2, 3 magic and that type of thing. And it's very, very evident in their lives now. They are 21 and 25. They are extremely different as adults as I was at their age. And I don't regret that decision one bit. And they're very well-mannered and obedient. You know, I mean, I didn't need to spank.
I think also, too, the idea that whatever we may have had in our childhood and we decide to become aware and awake, and we take that and we make a little bit shift with, as you said, with your own children. I also see, too, that sometimes when that concept happens, we also see ourselves as now we are struggling where we feel parts of ourselves might be having something wrong, or we may have like, oh, I overgave to my children and I really didn't care for myself along the way, or I overgave to my children because I didn't want to repeat a pattern, or I overgave to my child because that's what I felt, and it was almost like you're transposing the energy into the child. And however, now what we're seeing, as I work with a lot of end of life, is I'm seeing people who are in over the age of 50 are now experiencing a lot of defeat, as I use the word. And it's very important to use that word for myself, for them, is defeat is because they have sensed and known that they had not worked on some of the stuff, and they've kind of just been overgiving, overgoing, over out, reframe it, let's keep doing it. And it's almost like living a life of the other, the outside, versus taking care of self inside. But I don't think we would have taken care of self inside in the 70s or the 80s. There's no way. In the 90s, everybody was outside. Now it's all about social media, likes. It's still an outside job. However, those that have experienced those issues and have been starting to work on them are now the ones who are almost like seeding, you know, the concepts that perhaps, yes, we understood what we did. However, we're now also understanding that we are also still part of the not start of the problem, we're start of the puzzle. We're there is no linear existence here. We're really all one. So just as we might give to our child, we can also give to ourselves. And that's pretty much, I see, we're starting to see a shift now. End-of-life people are saying, in closure, can I give to myself? Because they're really starting to set up, I'd like to have a good end of life. I'd like to be able to be cared for when I'm moving on or whatever. So we're seeing that there. But we're also seeing people starting to say, okay, I'm starting to notice millennials are doing what they want and they're all hunky-dory, and elders are really feeling defeated and loneliness and like they just didn't make it. So there's, in other words, have humans over the past even just 60 or 70 years changed so drastically different? But now that we're living longer, we're seeing it because we can pick it out in each generation.
Today we discuss many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that, again, from my own personal experience, because when I looked at the healing that I wanted to accomplish in mm-hmm. my generation as a parent within myself and then also with my children, quite frankly, it was a larger job than one person could handle and a larger job than one generation
right.
could handle. And I managed to correct the piece of the physical abuse, the emotional abuse, the religious abuse, the psychological abuse. What I only realized really after the fact, because my girls were 13 and 17 when I divorced their father, and he had been abusive to one degree or another to me since before we got married. Never physically abusive, but just emotionally, mentally, psychologically. He is a closeted gay man, and he was aware of that when we met, and then, you know, chose not to let me in on that. And there is just a dynamic of abuse that goes along with a lie that is that foundational, which is mm-hmm. what I suffered for the entire 20 years that we were married, and it was the bulk of my daughter's childhood. And so it wasn't until I was able to pull the trigger, you know, file for divorce and then move into this space of my life outside of that relationship, that then I looked back and it's kind of like when you're sitting on the airplane, you go, oh, I totally forgot to pack
right.
underwear, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of a trivial, comparison, but I looked back and I went, oh my gosh, I completely missed this giant piece, and I inadvertently modeled for my daughters the same, I call it Oliver Twist, you know,
right.
living like a beggar, you know, please, more, you know, it,
yes,
I'm,
yeah.
because I had seen my mother do that, because she and my father had a very abusive relationship, which actually was at times physically abusive, and they had a very abusive relationship, and my mother modeled for me living and staying in a relationship where she was starving emotionally and in, you know, with intimacy and psychologically, and she was being abused. And then, you know, and I did the thing that so many parents do. I think it might be a little more typical of women. We are willing to make those sacrifices, or we think we're making them for our children. So in my mind, because
right.
I knew from when my daughters were very, very young, from when they were toddlers, I knew that I was starving in my marriage. I was starving sexually, emotionally, you know, in all areas of intimacy. In a normal marriage relationship, those didn't exist, because as a closeted gay man, he wasn't interested in me, but I didn't know why, you know? And so,
right.
I mean, he literally didn't even want to sit on the couch next to me to watch TV. And so I was aware of the fact that I was starving, but I felt that he was a good father. And I thought, okay, I can make these sacrifices for myself and I can do without. And you know, you talk about that not taking care of yourself and overgiving. That was my area of overgiving to my daughters. And it really wasn't until I could look back and I realized, oh, that was really, if I had it to do over again, although, you know, how can I say? I did as much as I had the strength to do at the time. Like I said, that the task of healing was greater than one person, you know, could accomplish. And I have such a tremendous relationship with my daughters now. And I have said to them so many times, you know, you will go so much farther than I have. Mm-hmm. They're so much stronger at these, you know, in their early 20s than I was. They have such a greater self-concept. My older daughter is going to be getting married in about 6 months, and she has just a really beautiful relationship with her fiance. And so I can see that, I can see the effects of the healing that I work that I was capable of doing. And I can see how I've been able to set them up for even more powerful healing in their generation and then on with their children. So,
And I think so also, too, the idea, I have four children also, and what I see is that we are each progressing and changing and shape-shifting different concepts. So my children would learn from me, my children will learn, and then they will pass it on to their children. It's almost like we think we have to fix ourselves and our children so that they can be, quote, happy, when really our children have also come in with their own set of stories or experiences in which they kind of brought in with them. So I would caution sometimes to people and say, all of the work in the world that you do with yourself and your children, and things still happen, it's about experiences in life, because that's what it's all about. So to say, oh, well, gosh, I must not have done enough. I mustn't have gotten out quick enough. I must not have worked enough. I must not have protected them enough, or maybe not given them enough. And I would say, absolutely not. Look at the journey where you all have come. And if they still now, let's say now you think, oh, everybody's hunky-dory, and then all of a sudden something falls off the end and someone starts dabbling with alcohol or drugs or suicide or a different form of abuse or whatever it is, that is never a mistake. It is never a defeat.
Right.
It is never something wrong. It's like, oh, okay, so we're going to learn about a different flower today. We're going to learn about a different experience today. We're going to now look at something else that's out there in the world and really take it on as each moment to go through it. I think sometimes people get so defeated or so broken when they say, look, but I've done all of that, and now they did that. I was a failure. Mm-hmm. They were a failure. You're a failure. The system failed, whatever. When really, can't we just accept all of our experiences as just that? Irregardless, without the labels, yes?
Oh, Dr. Jeanette, I could not agree with you more. And I, you know, in my experience in time and space, there are so many different facets and angles to look at the same gem. And it's funny because I have chapter 2 in my book is titled For the Adventure of It. And I talk about, I share a story of how my older daughter actually made herself known to me before I got pregnant with her. Mm-hmm. And when I had that experience is when I really began to accept it's something that's taught by a lot of spiritual teachers currently, is the idea that we come to time and space and we have chosen all of our experiences. And that outside of time and space, you know, in time and space, we will categorize them as being good or bad. We will say, these are the ones that are right. These are wrong. This is what should happen. This is what shouldn't happen. But outside of time and space, they are really nothing more than just interesting experiences that our particular piece of the greater consciousness is curious about, regardless of what, you know. So inside time and space, we can say, you know, suicide and murder and, you know, these things that we experience as being very painful inside time and space, outside of time and space, they literally are just interesting experiences that, you know, that our higher consciousness is very curious about. And so, and I have had to really embrace that piece of the whole gem, that facet of the whole gem, and know that, because truthfully, when I really came to the end of the road in my marriage and I became very, very eyes wide open about the kind of person that I had married, and also that he had, you know, really in the end showed himself to actually be a very bad father, I had a lot of localized, you know, within the context of time and space, I had a lot of angst about that. And I felt like, oh my goodness, I picked this horrible man to be my daughter's father. And then I had to, according to my own frame of reference, my own spirituality and my own concept of how things work, I had to step back and say, no, if my daughter made herself known to me before I actually conceived her, that means she picked me. Well, it also means she picked her father. And who am I with my finite human brain to question that? Her path is her own individual path. And it's, quite frankly, none of my business. Mm-hmm. I am just her mother to do and play the part and make the contribution that I'm supposed to make to her life. But she's an autonomous soul, spirit, and human, and she has picked all of her experiences, good, bad, or ugly, you know? Right. So yes, I am 100% on that page with you for sure.
And I think also to the idea that we have ownership over children and ownership over their progress and their path is, it's sort of like, good luck with that one, you know. Let's leave that one at the door, you know. And, you know, I want to talk for a second about this a little further. Is that also too, I know within my own experience and a lot of ancestral lineage that alcohol and abuse was prevalent in every single form you ever want to say. And then with my own children also too, they also dabbled in a lot of these abuses and in a lot of these addictions. And I said, but did I try not hard enough as a parent to shield them, to correct them, to change them?
Mm-hmm.
And when you look back at it, you say, you know what? It was not my job to fix them, have them avoid it, have them not see it, but also too to be able to save them. I'm not a savior. I'm actually here to be able to be within the process and to support as much as possible. So if you look at even, let's say, children and their first father was a terrible alcoholic. I mean, absolutely off the chain. But also in my ancestral lineage, there was a lot of it. And I look back at it and I say, well, why are the children now struggling with that? The answer is because they saw it, they felt it, but they wanted to experience it for themselves. It's sort of like saying, I see that roller coaster over there. I can hear all the people laughing and getting off of it. I can see it in pictures. Oh, I can feel the wind when it goes past, but you know what? I want to get on it. I want to ride it. I want to feel it. I want to know it. I want to lose my glasses on it. I want to pee my pants when it goes too fast. And I want to know what it feels like when someone's popcorn or food comes back on me. I want to know it intimately, period. But you have to put a period at the end of that, because we have to say you want to know why. Some, you know, counselors will say, but why did you want to know? You must have had to learn something. I said, no, period.
No, it's just for the adventure of it.
I want the experience. Yeah, period, dot, 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 hammer in the ground, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's so vitally important to understand. Is we say, why are addictions still around? Why is suicide still around? Why are we going from drug, pleasure seeking, this, that, or the other? And we're either abusing or pleasure seeking. Mm-hmm. You know, we're either abusing the people outwardly or pleasure seeking and we're abusing us inwardly. Why is this all still here? We're such intelligent beings. We have the internet. We think about anti-aging. We've got stem cells. We're almost ready to clone people. Why is that happening? And the answer is just is, period.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
Yeah, again, I really couldn't agree more, you know, continuing with the idea of, you know, that we, outside of time and space, that we select these experiences, and that outside of time and space, they don't have the layers of good and bad and right and wrong.
Right.
And it's funny you mentioned the roller coaster, because that actually was an analogy that I have pondered a lot, because I hate roller coasters. I hate them. Oh my gosh, Dr. Jeanette, I hate them so much that when I was on my senior trip, when I was a senior in high school, the cutest boy in the whole class said to me, if you will go on this roller coaster with me, I will sit next to you and I'll hold your hand. And I didn't go, because that's how much I hate roller coasters. And yet I can understand the dynamic that for me, that would be a harrowing ordeal. And yet I could see with my own two eyes that other people just love it. You know, I also don't have any interest in jumping out of an airplane, nor do I want to go snorkeling 100 feet under the ocean, you know. But there are people who – my idea of an adventure is like, maybe I'll travel to a foreign country where I don't know the language, but I'm staying in a hotel and I'm going to have a tour guide. Like, that's my idea of adventure, not this climbing Mount Everest, you know, baloney that some people, but some people would think that my adventure is boring, you know, and then there are other people who, and so it is again, fascinating you brought up this analogy, because that was part of my whole pondering process. And I was like, well, if someone else, if a roller coaster for me is a harrowing ordeal, but it is a delight for someone else, what if that were the case with my life experiences, which I had at that point experienced as a very harrowing ordeal? What if, and then I took a step further, I thought, okay, what if it isn't just a different person might enjoy these experiences that I have found to be so painful and, you know, harrowing, et cetera. What if it was a different part of myself? And that's when I really started to, because interestingly enough, you know, having been raised in a religious cult, when I left, I threw the baby out with the bathwater, and I spent about a decade of my life, you know, kind of like a 5-year-old with my arms folded across my chest and a scowl on my face, angrily declaring myself to be an atheist, you know, because, and legitimately so, I had been very, very abused in the name of God and religion. But it was pondering all these things that helped me to reconnect with, and I still don't use God vocabulary, but I will say the non-local realm or source or my higher power. But it helped me to reconnect with that dynamic inside myself. And I thought, that's when I started to think, okay, what if before I came here, I had this huge menu of experiences and I could just look at them as, oh, wow, that looks, you know, like this will hold. At the very end of my book, I ended up writing an epilogue that I didn't anticipate writing, but in it I said, I imagined my not yet incarnated non-local self, like tooling around the planet looking for parents to incarnate through, and coming across all of the quote unquote nice mommies and daddies, and thinking to myself, nah, that looks way too boring, you know, and then coming across these two tremendously broken people that I chose to incarnate through, and thinking, oh yeah, okay, now this is something that will hold my interest. You know, this is a challenge that intrigues me. But the second I got here, I began to second guess my incarnation. My very first month of life, I almost died from my mother's neglect. So, you know, that then has been my own challenge. And it, there is a very specific reason or a very specific story behind the title of my book, My Exquisite Purple Life, but the greater, you know, story behind it, or the greater concept behind it, is that I just love calling it My Exquisite Purple Life and, you know, categorizing it that way because I've had so many experiences that no one would call exquisite, you know, no one would. And so I love that juxtaposition between the title and then everything that I share from my life. But when I look at it from outside of time and space, I actually sincerely, and this is not, you know, me, you know, doing any kumbaya stuff, I really sincerely see my life as flawless. And I wouldn't change a thing, and I'm grateful. And I'm not begrudgingly grateful, like, well, I guess I'm glad I went through that because I wouldn't be the person I am today. No, I see the entire package of my life and all of my experiences as being just flawlessly orchestrated and created. So, yeah.
Great. You know, and that's definitely interesting, too, because a lot of times when I share with people about my experiences, they say, oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry for all your pain and suffering. And I'll say, no, I don't know what that word suffering means. And I truly, I can honestly say when you and I have gone through those, that definitely they were a challenge for us. However,
and unpleasant.
Right. Well, yes, and it was painful.
And painful.
It was bad. It was not good. But the idea is that you're so, when you look back is your reflection. So that's really, in other words, the reflection is where you are. It's about, you know, when we come into this world, I think, people think that our lifetime is to get ourselves into that median mode. You know, that underneath that bell curve where it's the top of the point, you know, the top of the bell curve, that everybody wants to get there. However, what we're, and they need to stay under there and stay really close. They don't want to be as an outlier. However, what you and I are saying is that we've been given experiences as outliers on both sides. And it's about how we flow through them that really is about our existence. I think sometimes we say, we always want to stay within that because then that shows in our lineage or our legacy or how we're going to be reflected upon by others. And it's sort of like, it's still that underneath the bell curve, people still seeing in perception who judging others. Yes?
I completely agree. And I feel like, you know, some, and I'm not 100% sure if this is what you're alluding to. So, you know, tell me where I'm wrong on this. But within that, I can see, especially, you know, because as a life coach, when I'm working with my clients, one of the, because I coach both straight spouses and people who are recovering from religious, you know, extremism or religious abuse. And one of the dynamics that's very common for me to work with my clients across the board is their victim mentality.
Right.
And especially for, well, for both types, but within the dynamic of being a straight spouse, because we were lied to at the altar and it was such a tremendous cover up, and it's a lie that negates the relationship, you know, or it makes the relationship impossible or inviable. So there is that sense of, you know, this has happened to me and poor me. And it's a key piece of work that I do with my clients is to acknowledge that I like to break down the word responsibility. So a lot of times people will say, well, that's your responsibility. And more what they're meaning is, you know, you better step up to the plate and you better, you know, take action on this or whatever, in kind of a more of a shaming way. But I look at the word responsibility and I break it down. Response, ability. Mm-hmm. And what is your ability to respond? What is available to you right now? And when I can look back over my marriage with my closeted gay ex-husband, I can see that I had a lot of ability to respond that I actually didn't take advantage of, that I didn't choose to take action on. And that's not to shame myself or anything like that.
No, not at all.
I have, you know, I talk about this whole dynamic in a chapter that it's entitled, It Wasn't My Fault, But It Was My Responsibility. And it's that dynamic of, and the other piece of this that comes into play was, I was in my early 20s when I first crossed paths with the great spiritual teachers of our time. So, you know, Deepak Chopra and Wayne Dyer and Thich Nhat Hanh and Ram Dass, et cetera. And they were all saying the same thing, which is that we do choose our life experiences and we are in control. And at that time, I railed against, I found that to be the most affronting and offensive thing. I was furious because I was so attached to my victim identity that, you know, I was abused by my parents and I got raised in this religious cult and, you know, I was abused by the cult leaders and on and on. And what they were saying was, and because you do have control and because you do have choice, you then therefore can create the future, the present and future life that you want. Now that was the hook, because I was like, okay, wait, that I want. Like I really want that. I really wanted to be able to create a life for myself that I would enjoy, full of experiences that were pleasurable and not painful and, you know, enjoyable and pleasant and all that. But I'm logical enough to know that my past was once my future. So if I am going to embrace the idea that I can create the future life that I want, I also have to take responsibility for the fact that I have to acknowledge and own that I created the past that at that point in my life, I felt so strongly was something that had happened to me and not something that I had brilliantly orchestrated and choreographed from, you know, my non-local self, my higher self, whatever vocabulary you want to use. So, yeah.
And also, too, I think the idea is that, let's go back to the roller coaster for a second. If you had that wisdom and you had that great insight and you utilized it at the time you were in those experiences, do you think you would have? Sometimes we say, probably not, because if I came for that experience and I shortchanged it, let's look at the roller coaster.
Right.
What if I have hopped off on the top? And like put it, thrown down a rock to stick it in the middle so that I could perpetuate the experience? What I looked at it as, I could yell and scream and they would say, oh, hurry, get me off, I'm going to lose it. No, you would say you're going to go through that, and it's in reflection where the gems are. It's mm-hmm. when you're going through it is that you do if fully engaged, you do open eyes wide open on awareness. You are an awareness of the experience because you are there.
Right.
So I think sometimes people will say, you mustn't have been paying attention. You should have done this. You should have done that. Well, no, because I was mm-hmm. aware. I was there for the experience. I did exactly what I was going to do. So I mm-hmm. think no matter what we have in an experience in this world, it's not about how we have to become bigger, better people and never, ever fall into the hole again. You know,
mm-hmm, right.
It's sort of saying, okay, I'm looking at my life in reflection. That's where those comments come up. Then all of a sudden you go out the door and there's something new there. And you'll say, do you take that wisdom with you? Not always. Because that other experience is really saying, I'm here at 100%. Are you going to tell me you're only going to come on this experience 20% because now you have wisdom?
Right.
It's sort of like, well, it's going to shortchange you. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So you might not have gotten what was meant that you came with. So
yeah,
I think sometimes when we say, are we here to become perfect people? I think, are we here to become those that are held out and on a higher echelon, on a pedestal? Are we doing better than and everyone else is in the muck? I would tend to say that we are all in a very similar place. It just matters which experience you're in today, which experience you're reflecting on, and what's next. And can we look at life as quite that simply, yes?
Yeah, again, I feel like a broken record, but I couldn't agree more. You know, the second when you say, are we here to have a perfect life, immediately my mind says, well, okay, wait a minute, we have to define perfect. Because
right.
I will tell you that I have had a perfect life. I have had an absolutely perfect life. And again, it's one of the things that I work on with my clients is taking off those layers of judgment of should or shouldn't, good and bad, right and wrong. And I continually just ask them, this circumstance you're in, this situation you're experiencing, are you enjoying it? That's all that I want them to evaluate. Are you enjoying it? And sometimes they'll say to me, well, I enjoy certain parts of it, other parts of it. And then we look at it in terms of percentages. You know, are you enjoying it enough to continue staying in it? Or has it, you know, whether it's a relationship or a job or an eating habit or an addiction, you know, it's like, are you enjoying it enough to stay there? Or has the situation become miserable enough? You are experiencing enough suffering. And then it becomes, it's a beautiful thing, because when you remove those layers of judgment, you know, when we judge ourselves, we really paralyze ourselves. And when we judge ourselves, it is like gashing your gasoline tank. And you are just going to drain all of your energy and your ability and your strength to change your circumstances. But when I ask my clients, are you enjoying that? And they say, I'm not
right.
enjoying. Okay, awesome. Well, you're the owner and operator of your own brain, and you're in the driver's seat of your own life. So what kind of experience do you envision that you would enjoy? And then it becomes much easier, not effortless. You know, we're still in time and space. But it becomes much easier, instead of them saying, you know, well, I really shouldn't be doing this and I really should be doing that. You know, and I just say, if you're not, you know, because it's like if I stuck my hand on a hot burner on the stove and I didn't enjoy it, I would never say to myself, oh, gosh, I really shouldn't be doing this. I should take my hand. I would just remove myself from that enjoyable, unpleasant, painful experience. But when we layer in those judgments is when we start to paralyze ourselves. And so, yeah, when we take off the right and wrong and good and bad and should and shouldn't, boy, it just becomes a lot easier, a lot easier.
Well, you know, Aideen, it was such a pleasure to talk with you today. In closing, I think the idea that if you're on the downside, you know, enjoy the ride. Mm-hmm. If you're in the middle of the ride, be with it and eyes wide open.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes where your work also too and mine with others is when they're on the upslope, they are now peering up and saying it's time to shed this. And I think when you're ready and you're able to shed it is when those other paradigms start to open up. So I think also, too, the idea that people say, I don't know about you, but they've always used the word surviving and things like that. And I'd say, I don't really know what you mean about surviving. It was just whatever. It was my experience. It was my life. It is what it is. It's sort of like surviving is sort of like something outside of yourself, when really those experiences is inside of yourself that you brought with you. So I think the idea is, when you're ready for that, is that there's always people around to be able to find, associate, and move through with, and just enjoy the dance. Yes.
Yeah. You know, everything I practice with my clients, I practice with myself and more. And oftentimes, I have said very often to myself, "Ride the ride, AD. You got on."
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Well, Aideen, could you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That would be wonderful.
Oh, absolutely. You can go to my website, which is Aideen T. Finola, and Finola has two N's, AideenTFinola.com. And through my website, you can check out my coaching services. You can also check out my book through my website. And my book is available in print, e-reader, and audio. So however anyone likes to consume it, it's there. So, yeah, and I also offer a complimentary half-hour connection conversation. So if anyone wants to connect with me further and find out more, that's available to them, and they can book that directly through my website. Then we'll get on the phone and chat, and I do that for half an hour for complimentary. So, yeah.
Well, Aideen, it was such a pleasure to speak with you. I think sometimes people say, oh, gosh, you know, I'm afraid to speak out. I'm afraid to open up. And really what you and I are saying, please, we're happy to hear your conversations. We'd love to dance with you and engage with you, because really we've all been in some sort of phase or phrase of what you're talking. Yes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I often will start my coaching relationship with new clients that way, and just saying, listen, you can't shock me. You can't get me to judge you. You know, I mean, as long as you're not abusing children or animals, that's my one stipulation. You know, outside of that, you can't shock me. I've probably done half of it myself, you know. So, yeah, 100%. And again, you know, to reiterate so much of what we've talked about today, I just don't operate within those labels of right and wrong and good and bad and should and shouldn't, because I just have found them not to be helpful. So, yeah, and I'm so grateful, Dr. Jeanette, for you having me on. This has just been such a treat to converse with someone who's so very like-minded. So really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you so much, and thank you so much for your time. If you'd like to find out more information about Aideen Finola and her book, My Exquisite Purple Life, please do click on the link on the bottom of today's show page and you go directly to her website. And truly do reach out, because she does offer so much more information, and definitely take advantage of that free session and reach out. Ask the questions. Just let your, you know, take off your glasses, just look outside and say, I'm just going to let it rip. I'm just going to say whatever comes to my mind, no matter what it is. It's about time my heart has to open up. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Till tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family. Clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.